At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural. Lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seen a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree?
Welcome back to Cryptids of the Corn Podcast. I am the great and powerful Mystery.
And I'm J-Clone 84.
And today, we're getting back with the Star Child Skull.
Getting back.
Yeah, part two. We're going to talk a lot about the experiment, some of the scientists that looked into it, and then what it could be, what we think it is, and all that fun stuff. So let's see how much you remember from last week.
Oh, gosh. So yes, we are recording this 2 weeks separate. It's supposed to be a one-part episode, wasn't it, in the initial?
I never know.
So turn into two, so here we are, part two. But yeah, weird skull.
Do you remember anything?
I do. I remember what it looked like. I remember our going over what it could be, you know, whether hydrocephaly or things of that nature. Progeria was mentioned.
Yeah, I want to talk about with progeria.
Things like that. We said we're going to?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, cool.
No, I'll bring all those things back up again just to reiterate. But yeah, so it was found. Now, remember, it's Providence. You remember what the Providence is when it comes to human remains?
What a Providence is? Oh, yeah.
Remember, it's history.
Right, yes, yes.
Ownership.
Who owned it before? It's
where it was found.
I think I compared it to Bitcoin.
Yeah, like the blockchain.
Yeah, blockchain, yeah.
Yeah, so it doesn't, this one has a weird Providence.
That's right, okay.
But supposedly it's found in Mexico in a mine shaft. And we talked about it may have actually been a cave that the young girl mistook as a mine shaft.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was found with an adult human, normal, and this skull was found with its hand wrapped around the arm of its whole body wrapped around the other human skeleton.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about the preliminary analysis of the highly unusual human-like skull by Dr. Ted J. Robinson. And this was in 2004.
Okay.
So very recent.
21 years ago.
And these are just, I have like 18 highlights from his whole study. If you just want that, just Google that and you can get the whole thing.
Google what?
The preliminary analysis of the highly unusual human-like skull by Dr. Ted J. Robinson.
Ted J. Robinson.
MD, LMCC, FRCS, all of that, like his accreditations.
Oh, okay.
Those are like his doctorates and all that
stuff. Good, because I was like, I don't know what you're trying to spell.
But yeah, so all that stuff. We're just going to go over some of the big highlights.
Okay.
And then we'll get into some of the other experiments done on the skull, tests and all that kind of stuff. But this is from his thing, so written it from him. The skull in question has providence that is not verified at present. That situation may change in time, but for now, all we can be said is certainly the skull is real. It is composite of calcium hydropyate, essentially mammalian bone.
Okay.
That's just the fancy word for that. It's parts of it configured naturally, aka not cobbled together in a way that with like hoaxes, like some of the other skulls we mentioned, where it's, you know, two pieces of different animals shoved together.
The Piltdown Man, for example.
So in his analysis, he said it's not that. They fit together naturally.
Okay.
And they're present numerous physical anomalies that do not confirm with any standard skull norms.
Okay.
So that's the first big highlight from his analysis. The skull remains in possession, as of the time this was written, in possession of Vancouver, BC, for the better part of 1 year. It was given complete dysentery to study it any way they saw fit. Analysis derives from extensive examination of the skull itself, combined with analysis of X-ray and CAT scan. I have shared these data with colleagues who have given opinions that will be mentioned in the documents as they've been input become relevant. So there's, in this whole document, there's tons that he sent, all the scans, all the CTs, all that stuff to a bunch of other colleagues,
okay,
for their weigh-in.
Okay.
A bunch of different opinions. As he says, in general, the skull has the basic components of a human skull: frontal bones, two xiphoids, two temporals, two, you know, just all these in the ocular bones. However, these bones are markedly reconfigured from their normal shape, and he has that in quotes, in positioning such bones in an unusual way. In addition, the bones itself have been reconstituted to equally marked degrees, being somewhat less than half in thick, or half the thickness of normal human bones, with a corresponding weight of roughly half a normal skull. The reconfigures and the reconstructions are uniform throughout all axes and all planes of the skull. This is not asymmetrical warping or irregular thinning that's the hallmark of typical human deformity.
Okay.
So all he's saying in that whole section is it is universally thinner
than a normal human skull. Yeah,
and lighter.
Which I remember us talking about that episode one of this.
Yeah, so I'm just reiterating some stuff also.
Mm-hmm.
To where it is not, in his opinion, not a classical deformity and not erosion or anything like that.
Right. It's just how it actually was.
Yeah, how it is.
Mm-hmm. It's just it is because that's what it looks like.
Yeah. It's an aspen because of the way it looks. The morphology of the skull is so highly unusual that it's unique in my 40 years of experiences as a medical doctor specializing in plastic and reconstructive surgery of the cranium. Besides its uniqueness, I undertook the extensive review of certain literary and conformal abnormalities, which failed to uncover a single similar example. In short, it seems that it not only unique in my personal experience, but also unique throughout the past history of worldwide study of cranial formation of abnormalities. This is significant.
So out of people that study all this weird skull stuff.
Yeah, and other examples. It's in his opinion, it's very unique in morphology. Five, there's specialists who examine the skull and associated X-rays, and he lists all these people. I can go over some of them. I'll just go over who they are and what their main thing is.
Okay.
Dr. Fred Smith, head of pediatrics, Children's Hospital, New Orleans. I'd gone over this call. Dr. Dave Hodge, radiologist. Dr. John Bekowski, radiologist. Dr. Ken Poskett, pediatric neurologist. Dr. Ian Jake Jackson. Oh, I cannot talk today. Craniopharyngologist, plastic surgeon in Michigan.
Okay.
Dr. John Nicole, craniopharyngologist, plastic surgeon, Seattle. Dr. Mike Kabari, oral surgeon, New Westminster. Dr. Tone Townsend, Utho. Myologist.
Not sure what that is.
I had something with bones. Okay. Way it's spelled. Dr. Hugh Parsons, another one of the same thing. Dr. Dave Sweet. That's super weird.
Why?
I know a Dr. David Sweet.
Oh, really?
Not, he's a forensic orthologist, is this one. One I know is an ichthyologist.
Oh, wow. All right. I'm a little different, but.
It's really weird to me, though.
Right.
Just really weird because it's exact, like the exact name spelled and everything the same. I don't know how many doctors there are with that name, but at least two.
Right, yeah, at least two. We know that for sure.
I'm going to wager three.
I think I know. I only know someone. I had a coach one time with a last name Sweet. I thought it was pretty cool. Or you might say Sweet.
Sweet. So doctor, next part, Dr. Dave Hodges, the radiologist, stated that the structural lines were open and growing at the time of death. Dr. Dave Sweet, an internal renowned forensic pathologist at the University of British Columbia, was of the opinion the skull was that of a 5 to 6 year old based upon the dentation of the right maxilla fragments.
Okay.
So well, it's teeth.
Okay. I was going to ask you what it was.
But he's a forensic pathologist. Mm-hmm. So he's used to finding pieces of people like and making these educated assertments.
The little minor details.
Yes. So in his professional opinion, he felt it was of a 5 or 6 year old.
Hmm. 5 or 6 year old human.
Human.
Okay.
Yeah. Just from the tooth.
Yes.
Just, you know, he's, you know, looking at
the teeth alone. Yeah.
Which is interesting. Because we also talked about the wear on the teeth
being
much older.
Yes.
It just, you know, all this is odd.
Yeah. Or just goes to show, like, human judgment and opinion is not the same across the board.
Well, I was even going the other way, that the skull has that many anomalies.
Right. I mean, it could go both ways.
That he was, I don't know if he's basing it off the teeth size or the roots or the, you know, the system. And the other guy was basing it off of the wear patterns.
Yeah.
So those are two different, you know, two different ways to look. To
translate it, yeah. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Lying with statistics.
I don't even think any of these guys are lying. Just they take their one field of expertise, and this is what that equation. If it was a human or fully a human, you may get the right answer.
I guess.
I'm just happy that enough scientists are willing to look into something strange.
I'm actually shocked that you're telling me like some of their, I guess, not reviews, but
oh, I can tell you where the universities, what places all these guys work for.
I'm just shocked that none of them are like this paper was actually published. Their results.
Well, it was in 2004. They started cracking down on it a little harder.
I guess you're right.
Though some specialists who looked at the skull disagree, and this is written by Dr. Ted, I have supported Dr. Sweet in his belief that the skull was that of a 5 to 6 year old child. Dr. Barska-Sky noted that there was no evidence of erosion of the inner table of the skull. Such erosion would be consistent with the diagnosis of hydrocephaly, the condition that can safely be ruled out as a cause of the abnormality expressed. Hydrocephaly also causes a widening of the structure or strutters, along are again not expressed here in this skull.
Hmm.
There are also a consensus agreement that both of these observations and other experts consistent with these features. So even though he's just saying that even though a bunch of these guys don't agree with what caused it, most of them agree that it's not hydrocephaly.
Okay.
That it's, you know, they're not seeing the traits you would see with a hydrocephalus skull.
Yes. Okay. That makes sense.
Dr. Capybara.
Capybara?
It's what it, I'm trying not to say it like that, but Capybara carried out 3-dimensional scans which measured certain fixed points along any skull, allowing the comparison with any peculiar skulls in the established norm.
Okay.
These assessments resulted in comparison with the structural analysis of 100 human skulls. The skull was found to be more than 10 standard deviations from the normal, a statistical center of a bell curve. This, among other strong indicators of the skull in question, is unlike anything previously seen or investigated.
So
you know a standard deviation, right?
Maybe explain it real quick.
Your classic bell curve.
Yes.
Is like 4 standard deviations is normally the end.
Okay.
So, you know, you're 50% of people are in the middle. And then every time you go a standard deviation away, it's halved.
Okay.
Basically.
Okay.
So 10 standard deviations away is so extremely unlikely.
It's very different, yes.
It's extremely rare. Like they said, this is the one.
Okay.
Does that make kind of sense? I'm not great with math, but 10 standard deviations. Normally, most bell curves show like 3 or 4.
Well, the way you explained it, it made sense to me, yeah. So I hope everyone at home understood.
But yeah, so 10 standard deviations is extreme.
Right, yeah.
Extreme.
Well, you're half of a half of a half of a half.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, and just keep going 10 times down the line, and you're left with very small percentage.
Dr. Townsend and Parsons examined the orbital cavities and concluded that it may have been sighted. But if so, the visual structures deviated strong enough from the norms. These cavities, while astonishingly symmetrical, were less than 50% of normal depth. The optical forum, which carries the optic nerve from the brain through the orbital bone to the eye, is nearly an inch lower than it would be on a normal human skull.
Hmm.
However, the attachment points for the muscles that control the eyeball's movement, still to be felt in the inner surface of the orbit, indicated that a ball, rather than some sort of mechanical or mechanism, was most likely expressed.
Okay.
So with the eye was still probably round inside and still had normal kind of attachments to turn and look.
Gotcha.
But the optical nerve opening was way lower. And the eye was much smaller and flat. Like it's pushed up towards the surface.
And this is just this the cavity within the skull.
The hole, yes.
The hole, the optic nerve. Because there is a little hole there, right?
Yeah, yeah. That's how, that's how your eye connects to your brain.
Okay.
That's where they used to put the lobotomy pick.
Was through that hole?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh.
Or they'd crack the back of your skull and the back of your eye.
Because then there's a... I think I talked about this. Is it on this the show, this episode, or main show? I don't remember. The moon and the optic nerve thing. Remember that comment? It was a throwaway comment, but same deal. Same deal.
Don't remember.
All right, moving on.
Next one. If indeed these sockets held eyeballs, their normal size would have been greatly protruded from the face, creating a serious liability to damage during routine activities.
Hmm.
Because the eyeball occupies a position lower in the face than normal, the rest of the socket markedly reduced in rectangular shape and depth. These would have significantly reduced in size. In either case, however, large eyeballs or small eyeballs, it would require upper lids 3 to 4 times more extensive than normal upper lids to be lubricated in the manual or in a manner necessary for human eyes to function properly.
Is it just because their eyes were so big?
In the way they're sitting, like they're pushed outside the skull. Most of our eyes protected inside the optic cavity.
Yeah. I didn't realize how big our eyeballs are until like you see one or something representing an eyeball outside of the head.
Mm-hmm.
They're huge.
So yeah, this is saying that the eye, it doesn't matter if it's big or small. It is so pushed out towards it. Most of the eye would need a giant lid to protect it.
Okay.
And there's some argument that it may not even had eyes.
Well, what would it have had?
Like, whatever deformity it would have had would maybe have caused it to be born without eyes or would have lost them very early.
Okay. Understood that.
Like, if it had normal eyelids,
yes,
they would have just dried out or burn up or whatever.
Mm. Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Dr. Hodge and Potosky found the brain inside the skull was abnormally large. This was determined by the lining of the intracranial cavity with a plastic bag that was filled with Niger bird seeds. This gave the size of roughly 1,600 cubic centimeters, which is 200 cc larger than the typical adult human skull of 1,400 cubic centimeters. This is even more unusual because the size of the skull compared to most favorably that with a small adult or even a child around 12 years old. The extra brain capacity is apparently due to the deep and shallowness of the eyes in this socket. The total lack of the frontal sinuses, not even vestigial bumps to discern these, significant bossing expressions of the upper and rear both of these partals. So basically...
Yeah, there's a lot.
The skull, even though it's compared to like a six-year-old's size, it is a lot bigger than an adult human skull's brain casing.
Mm-hmm.
And they think it's because there's no frontal sinuses. There's no, the eye sockets are tiny and pushed up so high, and the skull is so much more exaggerated.
So the brain can take up more space in the skull?
Yeah.
Now, how do they know that the brain actually filled that space, or if it was...
They're saying they're just the brain cavity, I guess.
Okay.
So they're saying that, you know, comparing the actual space the brain had.
Gotcha. Doesn't necessarily mean that the brain filled that full space, because it could have been just full of water and a tiny little acorn brain floating around there.
Well, like you're talking like hydrocephaly, you know, water on the brain.
Or that too, yeah.
You know, it's just the extra fluid builds up and kind of pushes the skull
out. Skull out, yeah.
But so they're just saying that there was so much, the skull is so different. In any case, they observed an extreme slant to the rear proctals, which is the back of the skull. The optical bone challenges whether the skull could have contained a total brain matter. The cast further doubted whether the cerebellum was typical. In a normal skull, the cerebellum rests at the base of the cerebrum, supported by the internal ocular protuberance, the twin flares of the sagittal succulus and the travius succulus. With the support mechanism, basically, they don't know how big the brain is, but there are some characteristics inside the skull suggesting that it didn't have the same supports that a normal human brain would have.
Meaning, so what would that mean?
That they don't know. They just know it's not typical.
Okay.
Whether the brain was bigger or smaller.
It doesn't tell them that.
It just tells them that it doesn't classically have the exact same connections that our brain would use for support.
Right.
The little bases that everything sits on.
So meaning our brains and whatever the Star Child's brain was is most likely different.
Very different.
Yeah.
Next, carbon-14 dating has shown the human skull to be around 900 years old with a plus or minus of 400 years. Or 40 years, sorry, 40 years. So that would be consistent with the original dating and the original story.
Okay.
That 900-year date.
Yes, okay.
So that's just a thing I found that was interesting.
Kind of corroborates that story a little bit.
And how you've heard us talk about carbon-14 dating. I think that it's only accurate when it's like closer to modern society.
Rather than being old?
Yeah.
Okay.
Like, I mean, you watch Oak Island or anybody that watches the Mysteries of Oak Island or whatever.
Yeah, with the treasure.
Yeah. When they do carbon dating, like they get like exact years, plus or minus 5 to 6 years.
Okay.
With like wood and stuff like that.
Because it's so recent?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, because only like 400 years old, 500 years old, 600 years old max. So I'm a big believer that carbon-14 is effective dating method for young things, relatively speaking.
Okay.
I think too much has happened for old things for it to be accurate, because we've talked about that before, that volcanoes and lightning storms and mudslides and everything could change, you know.
I mean, a wild kappa might get free and just disrupt the whole layer of dirt, throws off the whole timeline.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone loves a kappa on the show, everybody.
Last one. Dr. Matthew Brown, a dentist in London, close-up x-ray images of the maxilla in September of 2004. He states that the roots are unerupted teeth are consistent with a child who is about 4.5 years old.
Okay.
So he's saying inside the skull, if you look at the roots, it looks like a human. All right, a human that's 4.5 years old.
Hmm. Man, so yeah, we're getting some mixed messages here. Some people say human qualities, some people say not at all.
Well, I think it's heavily dependent on what they're looking at.
That is true, yeah. So some parts are actually human qualities.
Yes.
And some parts are not at all.
Yeah. Last thing we'll go over before we get into some of the what we think it is, what it could be, and all that, is the DNA testing summaries.
Okay, here's where it's going to get interesting.
And once again, go to starchildproject.com if you want any of this from their point of view. And then here in a minute, we'll flip to the other side of it, the skeptic side of it. DNA testing summaries. The 2012 undisclosed lab key finding of the FOXPT two fragment. Preliminary testing recovered from an apparent fragment of the Star Child's skull, FOXP2 gene. The fragment differs from the corresponding human gene fragment in position 56 along the DNA strand. This gene is highly conserved between species and is essential for human development.
Okay.
In humans, it is linked with speech and cognitive function. This particular gene fragment is absolutely identical in every human and ape, and has only one difference in monkeys, leading weight to the hypothesis that the skull with 56 differences is not a human being.
Hmm.
The finding, if proven, you know, by other labs, will raise many questions about how it develops and what abilities it had or had not. The result obtained need to be reproduced, verified, and extended.
Right. Yeah.
That was a 2012 unnamed lab, but you can actually, if you go to the website, you can click it and get the whole thing.
The whole analysis?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you know what you're looking at, it's, you know, it's fine.
So what did they say then that it was?
So this particular gene on the DNA strand.
Right. Number 56 or whatever.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is tied with human cognitive and speech.
Yep. And it's found in humans and apes.
Yeah. So we're not looking at we're not looking at maternal DNA. We're not looking at individual species DNA.
Okay.
Or individual India DNA. We're looking at species DNA or group DNA.
Okay.
So we're a very wide net. So every human and almost every human and every ape and most monkeys have this.
Okay.
So it's exactly the same in all of them.
Hmm.
This one doesn't, or it's different.
I guess I just didn't really fully realize the layers of DNA.
Oh, we have a human genome project is mapped extremely.
Right. But it's between humans and, you know, let's just say mammals, break it down to mammals. I mean, they share a lot of qualities, I'm sure.
It depends. So we talked about this before with DNA, when they say, like, we share 50 or 89% of DNA with this.
With a banana.
98% of DNA. Kind of.
Yeah.
we share the, basically imagine it like file names. So you go on your computer and there's like 10 folders.
Okay.
With file names.
Okay.
We share the file names with everybody. Once you open the file, it can be dramatically different.
Oh, okay.
It's like with this particular one, primates or apes and humans, when you open folder 56, it's the exact same.
Gotcha.
Because it just does the same function. It didn't need to be changed or altered. And it's only very literally different in monkeys.
Okay.
So the star child is dramatically different.
Gotcha. All right. Interesting.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
I know DNA is very confusing because the different types of DNA and the complexities.
No, yes, yes.
I did DNA testing and I have trouble.
Trouble comprehending it all. Or yeah. What does it mean? To me, what it means, what you just said is though, even though humans, monkeys, or apes, and all of us kind of share the same thing, this thing is also similar to us, but this thing that we all share, this does not share.
Yes.
So it's, we're just weaving a tangled web even more so.
Yeah. I think that's the whole point, is to show you that this should be confusing.
Yeah.
This is very confusing to high-level experts on both sides of the opinion.
Because if it's not a human, or if it's not a monkey, or an ape, or whatever, primate, let's just put it that, if it's not a primate.
It looks very similar.
But I thought everything that has these certain primate qualities makes it automatically a primate, doesn't it?
No.
No? Oh, okay. Well, shoot.
Are you screwing with me, or?
I guess I was wrong on that. Well, I thought I was taught that at some point in my life.
Oh, you probably were.
I guess that's wrong, huh?
In 2011, an undisclosed lab finding unusual mtDNA. And I'd say based genetic lab, name withheld for security reasons. Included preliminary testing on samples of the star child skull using advanced DNA testing technologies. So the result of this partial and needed to be reproduced, verified, and extended. This is mitochondrial DNA sequencing. Recovered was submitted by the U.S. National Institute of Health, BLAST, for comparison with all other DNAs in their database. Some of the DNA was similar to that of most humans. However, large amounts of it were not similar enough to anything in the extensive database to be matched. The fact is that DNA recovered from the star child skull could not be matched within the database, that the strange DNA is unlikely to be the result of bacterial or other contaminants. The database would be registered with all the bacterial DNA that we have identified. If these results can be reproduced and verified, it will show that the skull is previously undiscovered species. So this is mitochondrial DNA. This is a species fingerprint.
Right.
So this is much different than the previous DNA we were just talking about.
Right.
That's inside the gene itself.
Yep.
So this is the big surface level, just telling you what species you are.
Right. And that
this is kind of what I dealt with.
Yes. This is the part where it compares it to a known species data bank.
Yeah.
Is what you're drawing.
Yeah. And it's the U.S., what I named the data bank. A U.S. National Institute of Health, BLAST, is the data bank name. Capital B, capital L, capital
right,
A.
Right, it's an acronym.
Yeah.
Does that cover all animals in the U.S.?
It's
or species?
It's humans. It's mostly humans.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And human contaminants and that kind of stuff, parasites. But no, they have tons of animal DNA in as well.
Okay.
I mean, I haven't looked into this specific one.
I guess
but
I'm
the U.S.
you.
National Institute of Health, I'm going to guess that their data bank is extremely extensive.
I guess I'm asking you, this ain't like a state.
No. This limited. This is big.
Okay.
This is big.
Because most eDNA stuff is just dealing with the state.
Yeah, or state or region or whatever.
Right, yeah.
100%. No, this one I'm going to guess pretty much as every species that we have probably come in contact with.
In the world.
Yeah. That we have accurate samples of.
So it's going to be an expensive test, huh?
Yeah. Here's how expensive it is. We never messed with it.
No, right. Exactly.
And we were charging, the company I was working for charged a lot of money.
For the other, the cheaper ones, yeah.
So in 2010, an undisclosed lab, key results finding first recovery of mu-DNA, which is nuclear DNA. From both parents, given individuals unique qualities. So that's another type of DNA.
Okay.
So think of mitochondrial, think of a species. Genes are the actual individual like files inside the DNA. And then UNDNA is nuclear DNA, which is the individual, you and me. What is different in our DNA to make us?
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It's... I don't know if my brain's not functioning fully to... I get it,
though. It's a lot. It's a science lesson. You guys want... We We did two not very sciencey episodes at the start of the season, so right. You're getting it all right now.
We're learning today.
Was recovered so that they recovered nuclear DNA for the first time from the Star Child skull. The DNA was submitted to the National U.S. Institute of Health, the BLAST system, again for comparison with all other DNA in their database. Some of the DNA was similar to that of a human, while others could not be matched. These results could be reproduced, verified. It will show that the skull is previously undiscovered species. Pretty much the same thing again.
Hmm.
Is that, again, they submitted it with a different type of DNA and got a very similar result.
Mm-hmm.
That partial human match.
Hmm. This is very interesting.
Yeah, it's DNA. Now we're going to get into some of the older ones. So those were
older
DNA tests.
Oh, okay, older tests.
2003, Trace Genetics, California University, or California USA, first ancient DNA test done on a star child skull. State of the art at the time, this test was only be able to recover human DNA or other DNA in the sample was ignored. The test recovered a small amount of human mtDNA, which is mitochondrial, from the star child skull. But despite six attempts and evidence that it was some sort of nuclear DNA is in the sample, no human nuclear DNA was ever recovered. This led the public speculation that the human-alien hybrid, but this since has been dismissed as a favor of more plausible explanations of new species and other some genetic similarities to humans. So the original test 2003, they thought there was nuclear DNA there. They couldn't really read it, but they got mitochondrial DNA.
Hmm. Okay. Did they ever get DNA from the mother or whatever the other body that was with the star child?
I don't know that skull. I know it stayed with that lady for a while, but I don't know what happened to it after she died.
Hmm. That'd be interesting to just
but
to know.
Originally, when they talked about it, when they there was some analysis done, and I remember it was just human. Like it didn't look abnormal. It didn't look weird.
Right.
But yeah, I don't know.
But I'm curious to know if they shared DNA. You know,
that would
I mean?
Be interesting. Mom,
yeah,
maybe a mom or something
it,
like
if
that.
If it is an actual parent figure or a family figure, any you know,
it's interesting.
Or is it just was it a caretaker? Was it someone that was supposed to watch? Or was it?
Were they all just dumped in a hole?
Yeah, exactly. Was it that?
So in 1999, Bold, the British Columbia, Canada, first DNA test conducted on the star child skull. Unable to access the lab equipment to test 900-year-old DNA, the project opted to attempt to recover DNA using the lab with equipment only designed to recover forensics, less than 50-year-old DNA.
Hmm.
After multiple containments, the Bold lab recovered a tiny amount of nuclear DNA, about 10% of the usual minimum to do DNA testing required for accurate results. The subsequent testing was more achieved equipment was not able to be disputed in this result. The main difference between forensics and ancient DNA lab testing is forensic labs are not capable of removing much contaminant from ancient DNA. Star Child Project supports the belief that many experts in the result was not accurate and was likely a result of the contamination of the bone. So they kind of threw this study out because they knew it was a long shot
because
that type of testing was not made for that at that time.
Okay.
But that was the first test they ever did for DNA. DNA was very, not new, but the type of science was very, very new in 99.
So they're just basically writing it up to a contamination.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was so, yeah. They just didn't want to say anything about that.
Exactly.
Survey. Yeah. But you can actually still go to the website and see the full report. But then themselves, the website itself is just, no.
They're dismissive of
it. Yeah, it's just not, there's no point in it.
Because, yeah, there's nothing, enough room for speculation to where, You can't write this, put this down in concrete or in stone or whatever. That makes sense. I mean, we know how easy doing Bigfoot DNA collection.
Gosh.
How easily it can be human contaminated.
So we're going to take an ad break here in a second. And when we get back, we're going to talk about what this skull is, what we think it is, what it could be, all this stuff.
I know what it is. Welcome back to Cooking with JClone77, and we're back again on a new episode with my guest chef, the Defiance Dogman.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, well, okay, Defiance Dogman. Today, you're preparing a special dish. What do you got for us today?
Lamb chops.
Ah, some roasted lamb chops. Oh, now, you said today you brought a secret ingredient. What was that you brought with us today? Oh, spicy Bigfoot breath, raw garlic dust from Flavors of the Forest?
Yeah, best thing.
Ah, let me sprinkle a little bit on my lamb chop here that you prepared. Oh, my goodness. This flavor profile went from a 10 to an 11.
That means you go,
couldn't have said it better myself, Mr. Dogman. And you can find this. You can get your own bottles of Flavors of the Forest raw, spicy garlic dust, raw garlic dust, spicy garlic dust, Bigfoot breath. It's all delicious and packed full of garlic, delicious flavor that you can't get anywhere else. You can get it at flavorsforest.com/corn.
At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting six crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus four biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only $10 every day. Now that's finger-licking good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
So bad.
I love those ads. We got more coming out. I got four. I think we got three or four recorded.
Good. You know what? The people need more Flavors of the Forest in their life.
Exactly.
It makes life better.
Remember, take a kid fishing. Donate to the kids fishing. If you want to do that, join the Junior Anglers of Indian Lake, Ohio. Facebook link below.
Future Anglers.
What'd I say?
Junior Anglers.
Future Anglers. Sorry. Sorry, right. Tosh. No, seriously, guys, if you want to get your kids out fishing, they do amazing work. I know they've just been doing some boat stuff recently. We do ice fishing. You want to donate gear or donate money or donate your time. I know they do some hunting stuff as well. Maybe even mushroom foraging and all kinds of stuff. It's just really about getting your kids outdoors.
Yeah, get outside, get their hands into some dirt, wriggle some worms around and throw them in the water and catch some fish.
There you go. Link below. All right, what is the skull?
What is it? Well, it was the former head of something living.
Yes. So first option I have, I want to talk about is it a hoax? And here's what I have written.
Ooh.
Yes. No. Maybe. Real skull, just maybe misrepresented.
Okay. Oh, that's the full explanation?
Yeah, that's just what I have written
here. What do you mean misrepresented?
No, I really don't know. I guess what do you mean hoax? When you say hoax right. with this, it is a real skull. There is enough evidence to show it is bone from a mammal of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
And it has enough human relations as far as key attributes with the skull and DNA testing that it is at least some part human. But there's enough weirdness too for it to not fully be that. So I guess what I meant by this was, yes, no, maybe, it depends on which group you are. Because if you watch Ancient Aliens, it is 100%
an alien,
a hybrid skull.
Oh, yeah.
And if you watch some of the Earthworks people, you know, it was showing how advanced they were, this part of Mexico, because they were able to take care of so well of a deformed human that lived to be, you know, significantly older than they probably would have.
Right, yeah.
So there's just, that's what I mean by misrepresentative. So not a hoax is in the fact that the skull's not real.
But the story behind it.
Yeah, what it could be maybe a hoax.
Yeah.
Because the Star Child Project doesn't do a lot of the alien stuff.
Okay.
They do some of it, but they have opinions like anybody does. But yeah, so that's the first thing I have.
But you can't rule that out as far as being the story behind it. Obviously, though, it's a real thing. This is a real skull.
Yeah. So the next option I have is cradle boarding.
Okay. This is where they they put the boards on the head and tie boards.
So cradle boarding is a form of artificial skull deformation, often suggested for the reason of the unusual flattening at the rear of the Star Child skull. Mm-hmm. That is one of the a high feature mm-hmm. when you have cradle boarding because the board that lays on the back of the head is flat.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a big flat spot back there.
Which didn't tribes in, was it Africa that did that?
There's people from all over the planet have done it.
Right.
But various different ways. I don't want to say Africa for sure because I don't know.
I think that was one of them because I was watching a video where they did it to honor supposedly the gods or something that taught them or their tribe in the past, you know, in the history. That's what the way their skulls were shaped. So they bound their babies' heads. So as they grow, they kind of emulate that shape to emulate.
It could be. I just don't know that. So yeah. I don't want to say that for sure. But there are plenty of people that do this all over the planet.
All over the planet, yeah.
So cradle boarding is a practice of strapping infants into a cradle board, which makes it easier for the child to be carried. In case the child has soft optical bones, flattens the back of the head, being pressed against the board. Cradle boarding and all other artificial shaping techniques leave telltale signs on the bone and the skull. And none of them were able to change the shape or position of the ions. Remember we talked about that, the small bumps at the rear of the skull.
Yep.
So this is a big thing against it being a cradle-boarded skull.
Right.
Is a Star Child skull shows no evidence, as far as Dr. Ted Robinson declares, of artificial shaping, and the ions are totally missing, not moved, gone. Mm. So just yes, no. There are some things like the flat back of the skull would be like, yeah, it's cradle-boarding. And then there are other parts that you're like, no, it does not move optical nerves.
Right.
That internally part of the skull, it does not move that. It does not move the ions. They're gone on this skull.
So if it is cradle boarding, it's a combo of something else too to create these other features. Be. Yeah.
Yeah.
Whether it be in a already deformation, you know, being born that way, or some other device they've got them strapped into, which hopefully it's not that.
What?
Multiple devices they're strapping this baby's head into.
Yeah. Next huge one that gets pushed a lot.
Okay.
Hypercephaly.
Okay.
Which, I mean, it has good reason to be pushed a lot.
Yeah.
I highly suggest anybody look up a child's hypercephaly skull and compare it to the Star Child skull. There are a lot of similarities.
Okay. Just physical appearance?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Me not being a boneologist. They look very similar, okay. But I do see the characteristics that they talked about are different, and we'll talk about that. Hypercephaly is often suggested as the unusual cause of the bulging of the skull at the rear of the sides, the partial blossoming of the Star Child skull. Hypercephaly, also called water on the brain, is a condition where fluid build up inside the skull, causing great pressure, which pushes the skull outward, inflating like a balloon. The condition is well known and is reliably treated in modern medicine. It is easy to expect, or easy for an expert to recognize this.
Hmm.
It leaves many telltale signs.
Hmm.
A study led by Dr. Ted Robinson, again, concluded the Star Child skull was not hypercephalic. Dr. Barsky noted that there was no evidence of erosion of the inner table of the skull. Such erosion would be consistent with a diagnosis of hypercephaly. So this condition could safely be ruled out as the cause of these abnormalities expressed. Hypercephaly also causes a widening of the structs. Again, not expressed here. This is consistently agreed upon both of these observations with other experts conversed with these features. So that was several doctors when looking at the skull saying that the internal, so basically the erosion is from the skull ballooning.
Right.
They many of these people agree that that's not what happened here.
So basically, long story short, hypercephaly is out.
That's what they feel. Yeah. And there's others that don't agree with that statement.
Okay.
But yeah. Any questions so far?
I figure, you know, if someone's an expert on that and identify it and they see this and say it's not that, I guess I can't always trust the experts, but in this one.
Well, we talk about it a lot that there are experts on both sides of anything.
Right. Yeah.
There are high level people that say that this is nothing more than a hype for left. I can't say it.
Hypercephaly.
A hypercephaly skull.
Mm-hmm.
And there are plenty of people that say
it's not.
It has none of the signs of that.
Right. Yeah.
Besides the general shape, just like me, a novice looking at it.
Yeah.
If you just handed me that, I would say it's hypercephaly.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know any, like, I don't know anything about
human bones.
You don't
know the difference. Yeah.
Yeah. I just know with a ballooning of the skull.
Right.
Morgellons is the next big one.
Mm.
And that's one I don't know much about. The condition thought to cause strange fibers to grow in the skin and soft tissue of humans. Is often suggested as the example of the strange fibers found inside the bone of the Star Child skull. So remember another weird fact with the Star Child skull.
Yep.
Morgellons fibers in soft tissue and significantly larger than microscopic fibers found in the Star Child bones. Morgellons fibers found in the bones are reportedly different from those found in the skin and are described as crystalline.
Hmm.
Therefore, these are not resembling the strange string-like fibers found in the Star Child's bone. While there are some other superficial similarities, it seems highly unlikely that the fibers in the Star Child bone are connected to Morgellons, again, in their opinion.
So it's almost like something similar to Morgellons.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen pictures of both.
Uh-huh.
Morgellons fibers are way bigger.
Okay.
And when they're found in the bone, like it said here, when they're found in the bone, they're like crystalline. They're not like strings.
Mm-hmm.
They're only like strings when they're in the skin or soft tissue, like meat and muscle.
Okay.
So it's very odd that they'd be in the bones.
Yeah, that's true. That makes sense.
And so they're just, it's just odd all around. As you probably caught on at home, there's not really a good one size fits all on this.
Mm, or is there?
Well, there is. I have it at the end.
It better not be the same as mine. Well, it might be because I'm correct. So unless you're correct.
Progeria.
Okay.
Which I've seen people with this. I did not know what it was.
I was going to say, you said something last week about not knowing what this is.
I looked it up after, and there's a couple people on TikTok that there's two girls with this that they show some of their lives on TikTok.
Okay. There used to be a really big YouTuber back in early YouTube days.
Had progeria?
Oh, yeah. He was a foul-mouthed individual, though. Not good for family watching, but... Okay. Interesting nonetheless.
Progeria is a condition that causes increasingly being suggested as a possible example of the Star Child scroll. It has multiple sympathetic conditions, meaning it affects multiple systems in the body. Not every patient will display all of these possible symptoms.
Okay.
So it has a myriad of different systems it can affect
at
any given time.
Yep.
And not every person that has this disease is going to experience the same symptoms.
Gotcha.
Progeria research is a relatively new field. Progeria is a very rare condition, with only a few true experts. These factors add to the confusion that makes it easier for amateurs to question statements without being able to question further. After extensively studying the Star Child skull, Dr. Ted Robinson is convinced the Star Child skull is not a result of progeria. No medical doctor or specialist has ever examined the Star Child skull and diagnosed it with progeria.
Okay.
So besides armchair, basically all they're saying, besides armchair detectives...
Nobody
that's ever held the skull in a medical professional has ever said progeria.
Okay. That makes sense.
Yeah. Which, like I said here, there's tons and tons and tons of signs with progeria.
Yes.
Progeria is a fatal genetic illness that will cause features of prematurely aging in a child. Most cases, it's fatal by 13, with other handfuls surviving into the 20s. The oldest survivor on record is 29.
Wow.
Symptoms include hair loss, wrinkled skin, stunted growth, cardiovascular degeneration, small and unusual facial features, osteoporosis, age-related loss of sight, loss of hearing, joint anomalies, dental anomalies, such as dental crowning and the failure for teeth to erupt.
That's a lot of symptoms.
Yeah, and yep. There's more than that.
Yeah, oh yeah. If anyone doesn't know what progeria, well, I mean, if you look it up, you'd probably recognize it. I'm sure you've seen it before.
I was in that home. Same boat. I knew the word, didn't know what it meant.
But it's, I mean, something you're born with. It's not like
it's a genetic disease.
Yeah, it's not like something you can catch or something.
Yeah, So next one, would you like to know what the official statement is?
Yeah. By who? Who's the official?
Oh no,
authority. A Smithsonian.
Close. Yale.
Okay, what's Yale have to say?
Neurologist Stephen Nobel of Yale University Medical School says the cranium exhibits all of the classical characteristics of a child who died as a result of congenital hypercephaly.
So they're just going with hypercephaly.
And the cranial deformities were the result of the accumulation of cerebral spinal fluid within the skull.
Okay, well, what about the things in the eyes and the larger eye?
Don't worry about that.
Hmm.
Hypercephaly.
Wipe your hands. It's done, boys. Move on to more important things, you know, like war and things like that.
I thought you'd get a kick out of that.
That's ridiculous. I'm not shocked.
Just so you know, the Smithsonian pretty much has a copy-paste statement.
Okay. Makes sense.
But yeah, this Steve...
The time police have to rein this one in. Hypercephaly. That's it. No more questions.
That's pretty much... Exactly. If you Google this and look up the Wikipedia article,
yeah,
it's like half a paragraph long because of this.
Wow. Because of this statement or what?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay, this conclusion.
Like, if you think it's anything else, you're stupid.
Right, pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
I only read a list of like 30 high-level doctors and medical professionals that most of them don't... I want to make that very clear. Most of the people I read do not say that it's an alien or anything weird like that. They just say it's unusual.
They just go with the facts.
It's very unusual. Here's the unusual things.
Yep.
Whatever you conclude from that's on you. But we can agree that these are very unusual characteristics, and there are tons of them.
But I'm a tenured college professor, researcher, and what I say is correct.
All right, some other possibilities. So those are all the medical ones.
Okay. Now let's get into the real ones. Yeah.
So those are all the medical ones, and out of all of those, hypercephaly to me probably is the most likely of that group.
Okay.
Maybe it is, maybe it isn't. I don't know enough about hypercephaly, like the actual disease itself, to be any kind of weigh in on it.
Mm-hmm.
I just know they're, like they even say in this article, a lot of armchair experts, that's what they yell at it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a lot of the doctors and stuff that have held it have really agreed that it's not hypercephaly.
Right. But
it's hypercephaly.
Hypercephaly. Exactly. You got it. End episode. It's done. It's hypercephaly. It's over with. Why would we even question authority? Why?
Next one. Now, the next two work, you kind of lump together.
Okay.
It's an alien. This is maybe a gray.
Okay.
That a gray was with this Mexican community and had died, maybe a landslide, and got pushed in this cave.
Was it Ned the alien? Who was the one from Texas?
Yeah, it was Ned, yeah. Well, he died in the wreck, but they buried him.
Well, yeah, I'm saying it might be some of his kin.
Yeah, so that's a big thought, that maybe it was just an alien among this community. That's why nobody can agree on it, that we've talked about how similar grays, for example, and other alien entities are to humans.
Yeah, what if it broke free and, like, wanted to live amongst the humans?
Mm-hmm. Or got left there.
Or found him a lady.
Yeah, that may have been who he was holding on to.
Exactly.
And then the other kind of one with it is
Roger from American Dad.
There you go. The other one that kind of goes hand in hand with that is an alien hybrid.
Okay.
That this is a child that maybe, you know, we talk about the alien hybrid program, that maybe this is one that didn't get picked back up.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, it's in the name, literally in the name, the Star Child Skull. That's what they call the alien-human hybrids, you know, Star Seeds. Star Child.
Free the Rabs just did an episode on Star Seeds as of recording this today. Mm. It just came out.
See what I mean?
Yeah. But so that's a big one that a lot of people really, really think that's why the DNA is so funky.
Right.
That's why nobody can really agree, because none of these experts may be wrong.
Right.
When they look in their particular field.
But
that's why they all get so many different answers.
Right. And when it doesn't fit into the conventional box, then you can point the fingers. Well, that can't be right. That can't be correct because it doesn't fit in conventional science.
Yeah.
It's not what the textbook says at Yale.
Well, that guy definitely. Well, most of these doctors would just give their opinion for the study and just be
right.
done with it.
Right. Yes. Yeah.
They don't care what it is. They just.
I mean, as far as the narrative goes. Yeah.
Like two different people looked at the teeth. One guy looked at the teeth weird and one guy looked at teeth roots.
Mm-hmm.
And one guy got 50 years and one guy got 4.
Right. Exactly. A little bit.
They're
different.
Probably both right as far as the conventional wear patterns and the conventional roots.
Right, because...
if they were looking at a person, that's what they would call it.
Right, yeah. Or maybe it was an old person's teeth.
Inside of a baby's skull?
Yeah. And then, so when the roots took hold, you know, they regrew. So they're fresh youthful roots, but the wear pattern of a 50-year-old. So it does make sense.
There you go. I don't know. Alien hybrid, that's a big one. We haven't done a lot on this show about...
Not really, no.
But there's tons of
not it. As far as an explanation for something.
Yeah, I mean, even talking about people getting abducted and
right.
There's a repeat abductor. They keep saying that 3 months that they take their babies back and they've been showed their alien hybrid kids and
yeah.
And Stan if you look Romanek. At some of the reconstructions of this skull that people do, it really does look like some of the classical reconstructions of alien hybrids today.
Right.
Where people say when they're showed their kids again that that's what they look like.
But I mean, that could all just be
100%.
Biased influence.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'm just saying there is a lot of similarities there.
Right, yeah.
So what do you think about these two?
I mean, if there's ever was an example, like a tangible, physical, DNA-filled example, this could be one. This could be it. The example.
Yeah, I mean, the DNA is very odd. Everything from human hits, non-human hits, missing things, all humans, all apes have,
mm-hmm.
you know, fundamentally being different,
mm-hmm.
but also reading on DNA test as human or mm-hmm. partially human.
Right. But alien from like the stars, perhaps? That's where I just get a little...
I'm not even saying that. I'm just using the gray or whatever.
Well, you know what I mean. Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah. Could be something like that. Like So if it's an alien, like a government alien, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, whatever they are. Mm-hmm. Whatever those things are. This 900 years old, though.
Right. I mean,
but there were grays. People in power. People have seen grays forever.
I mean, they're in the pyramids. They've been forever. I mean,
Mexico has some of the biggest pyramids in the world.
Right. Yeah. Well, the one in Egypt, though, has the depiction of the gray-looking entity. But that's not what these are. It's not what this is.
I have others.
Oh, okay.
Next one is that these are kind of the same thing as grays, but the cave creatures. Because it was found in front of what I thought was a cave. That mine?
Like ant people?
Like the ant people.
Okay.
Like these are the people that live underground. These are the beings. And maybe this Mexican village, the 900 years ago,
had close contact with them.
Relationships with them.
Yeah.
Like some of the out western tribes used to say that they would have contact with them and stuff like that. Leaning back on Daryl Sims, you know, talk about the Native Americans saying they come from underground. Mm-hmm. This could just be one. Maybe they both got caught in a landslide, got pushed back, died.
Or they had their secret union, you know, that they were forbidden lovers.
Forbidden lovers.
And this is their secret cave where they died holding each other.
There you go. My last one is maybe, just maybe. Are you staring at me so weird?
And I want to see if you say what I'm thinking. Say I got one in the chamber. I think I'll blow your mind.
This may be a fey skeleton.
Is that an oxymoron?
What?
A fey skeleton?
Fey, a fairy.
Right, I know, but
the little people, the lost people.
Do they really have like physical bones?
Maybe if they die here.
If they die here.
Yeah, you're tied to reality wherever you die.
I guess maybe it could be a rule.
Huh. It is a rule. I just said it.
It could be a rule. We don't know for sure. But no, I mean, I would say maybe if that's how it worked. I personally don't think. I think if a fae like dies here,
they just dematerialize.
Basically, yeah. Because I almost feel like their existence. I guess no, because when they're here physically, they are here physically. But I don't know if like if that dies, if their spirit, you know, just. Well, I don't know. Does the shell remain? I don't know. I mean, this could be. This could be. I guess I can't rule it out, but you're leaving one off the list.
Go ahead.
Which is the probable actual answer, and I'm not even joking. This could be the skull or the remnants, leftovers, of a homunculi.
Oh, it could be.
Think about it, though. You create this thing through alchemical ways. I don't know how the right word. Alchemy. You're creating a homunculus. And if people don't know what that is, it's basically like
go listen to One on One.
Yeah, One on One does the best breakdown of all homunculi information. But basically, let's just say, in layman's term, you're creating a little person in a jar. Let's just put it that way. You're creating a human being. Basically. Mm-hmm. I wonder, though, you know, with the skull composition being lighter and just different density, mm-hmm. What if it was that? You know, if it's a physically, this is how they're made when they're made in that fashion. It's different material. It's different makeup because it's not of God, you know. Hmm. It's man making it, so it's different. That's why the wear patterns on the teeth, they're just odd and different. It's because it's 4-year-old homunculus, but yeah, that's from like 50-year-old
parts.
You
know, I've said this before. There's a show on Netflix called Hildy.
Hildy?
Yeah.
Okay.
Or Hilda. Hilda.
Hilda.
I can't remember which one it is now. But does like a modern world mixed with the paranormal.
Uh-huh.
And a lady did that and made a little person. And they didn't know it because it was like made out of, it looked like it was made out of trash.
Yeah.
They attack it. There's a real human skull in it.
Huh?
And that was like the center of the magic.
Hmm.
Maybe.
Homunculus.
I'm going something with the underground thing. The ant people, there's grays, all this stuff underground. That part of Mexico is full of these massive caverns and caves and these valleys. Mexico has a long history of odd paranormal stuff.
Yeah.
An extremely rich culture. I mean, they built some of the biggest pyramids in the world, and nobody ever talks about it.
Right, yeah.
There was a joke a comedian did about how hard workers, the Mexican people, are, is that everybody always questions about who made the Egyptian pyramids.
Uh-huh.
Nobody ever questions who made the Mexican pyramids.
Right, they know they did it.
They're like, yeah, they needed it for a quinceanera.
Yeah.
This weekend. Eight guys did it in 4 hours.
Yep, got it up fast.
But no, Mexico is an amazing country with some beautiful stuff. And I kind of wonder if this was maybe an old connection with some of the cave dwellers, some of the cavern creatures.
It could be. Out of all the options you presented, that seems like the most reasonable one. I mean, honestly, over alien hybrid, over hypercephaly, different contact of different people.
And who knows? I mean, from these DNA tests, they may be kind of related to people.
Well, maybe that's why the eyes too are huge.
Yeah, cave creature. Yeah. Needing it. From the DNA test, they may actually be related to people in some fundamental way, whether they were changed thousands of years ago.
Right, yeah.
Creation of the Nephilim.
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Hybrid human species
mm-hmm.
that are treated underground.
Or a baby of the human predators.
Ooh, or that too.
Talk about that. A pale crawler type entities.
Mated with this woman. She retreated to the cave and gave birth, and then they immediately both died. She gave birth to a 4-year-old.
Wasn't this like 5'1" tall?
And long gestation period.
Long gestation.
That's why she died.
Now, this is an odd one. I really don't know. And it's not talked about a whole lot besides like every once in a while on Ancient Aliens, they'll bring it up. And it's always an alien hybrid.
Oh, duh. Everything on there.
It's always an alien hybrid.
Everything on that show is an alien hybrid. Even the buildings, they're all alien hybrids. The clothes.
I really just don't think this is, but I mean, these experts could be flawed in their opinions.
Or bi, yeah.
Yeah, biased, flawed, whatever. And so could the other side of the experts be.
Yeah.
So I don't even know where to take about the actual diseases. But from the StarChildProject.com, from their pointing out of the big differences between hypercephaly and this skull, like, if I just seen it, I've said that before. If I just seen it, I would say hypercephaly. If you just handed that to me,
mm-hmm.
I'd be like, this is a child that had hypercephaly. Until you point out enough of these characteristics, and you're like, well, that's too many odd things.
To still be that.
But a lot of people say it had to be, two or three odd, rare diseases all at once,
which that could be an option.
It could be. Anything else to add?
No, this has been a good one. I think we figured it out.
Homunculus.
Yeah, homunculus, cave creature.
I have been the great and powerful mystery.
And I've been JClone84.
We'll catch you next week, guys.
Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Cryptids of the Corn podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye.